you, dear listener, for tuning in to Panopticon, a podcast which explores various elements of the occult, culture, and consciousness. And now your host, Andy.
Greetings and welcome to the third episode of Panopticon. Today we will be speaking with Raymond Wiley about the Georgia Guidestones, a massive, mysterious granite monument in northeastern Georgia, which some say is either a kind of Ten Commandments for the New World Order or instructions for a post-apocalyptic world. Raymond, are you there?
I am here. How are you doing tonight, Andy?
I'm very well. How are you?
I'm doing very well, and I think it's amazing that we can sit here and talk to each other and do this podcast thing from, like, you are literally exactly halfway around the world from where I am.
Yeah. So. Yeah, I am. That's crazy.
So, yeah, be happy to talk to you about the Georgia Guidestones and whatever else, you know, suits your fancy tonight. Thanks for having me on.
Oh, no problem. Thanks for coming on. Why don't you tell our listeners about yourself and your work with Disinfo and Out There and all that jazz.
And all that jazz. actually, I'm a very fine karaoke artist, and every week I hear that song sung by the same girl. It's crazy. But, that's my primary thing, Bruce Springsteen songs on Thursday night. But when I'm not doing that, I make podcasts about strange and unusual topics and how strange and unusual this wide world of ours is. And that started off, from a very young age, watching movies like JFK and BBC documentaries that would run on, like, A&E from Henry Lincoln about, like, the Templars and Holy Blood, Holy Grail, and Da Vinci Code kind of topics. And later on, when I was an adolescent, I live in the Bible Belt, so there's all this religious pressure on you. And when you realize that the ruling paradigm around you is kind of bullshit, you go looking for other spiritual and religious paradigms, and that led me to research the occult and magic and these sorts of topics fairly heavily. And all this sort of came together over the years, and I ended up at the University of Georgia studying history, and I worked for their radio station, their FM student-run radio station there, WUOG 90.5 FM. I got to produce a film series there, and I would also DJ, like, the Golden Oldies show on Saturday nights sometimes. When they weren't playing 80 Suf John Stevens songs in a row. I'm really glad that decade is now over, actually.
Yeah.
Anyway, I got the opportunity after working for the college station for a few years to create my own series, my own talk series. And me and my friend Joe McFall came together and created a series called Out There or Out There Radio, depending on what season we were in. And it's a 50-episode series about the occult and conspiracy theories and hidden history and just sort of fringe and Fortean-style topics. You know, we were really looking to make a series that was reminiscent of something like Coast to Coast AM, or even better, maybe something like In Search Of, which I remember watching religiously the reruns of that show when I was younger. It started off as a college radio series, and, you know, right at that same time, a project that we had been working on at that station was podcasting some of our shows and trying to syndicate some of our shows. This was 2005. This was right after the iTunes store first launched. And even at that early point in sort of the history of podcasting or whatever, we found that we were getting a lot more listeners and a lot more of a reaction from people who were listening to our shows and our archived shows online than they were on the radio station. So, we went on to create 50 episodes of that, and it really, like I said, it got a lot of play on the internet. I think more than it did on WUOG, even though the station reached out about 30 or 40 miles into the surrounding area. Wow. Yeah, it was a great place to work, and it still is if you're, you know, a college student interested in getting broadcast experience without, you know, having to spin the same Eagles song 50 times a day. And believe me, if it's an Eagles song 50 times a day, you're lucky. I'll just put it that way. But anyway, enough of me ranting about the radio industry. That was a great opportunity. We created a series called Out There, and we had guests ranging from the famous conspiracy theorist Jim Mars, the journalist, Dick Rivas, who's an expert on the Waco incident, which was a topic that seemed to come up over and over again. And we would also have people like the Reverend Ivan Stang, who's the head of the Church of the Subgenius, the Church of Bob, if you will, and sort of a comic joke religion. And then sort of on the other end of that coin, we also had Peter Gilmore, who's the head of the Church of Satan, on the show to talk about sort of his take on the occult and magic and his dark lord or whatever. So we had a great range of topics there, and you know, I knew by the end, by the time we were getting to about 50 episodes, the end of the second season, that I was going to be, you know, graduating from UGA. Joe had already graduated, so we weren't really qualified to be on that station anymore. And I didn't really want to go into radio for reasons I've just explained. It's called Take It Easy. And so, you know, we tapped Disinfo, which was like the first and our top choice for who we want to work for. You know, who do we like to make podcasts for? We knew it didn't have to be a radio entity. And so we had the opportunity to start making podcasts for them in 2000.
And those are all great as well.
Oh, well, thank you very much. The disinformation podcasts are a lot like what we did with Out There. One of them it's like two series on the same feed. One of them is a news show called Disinformation World News, where we report on the weirdest topics from recent weeks. And also my good friend Austin Gandy does a series a segment on it called The Invisible College, which is sort of like this funny, holistic detection kind of take on recent weird news. And then the other series we do is just interviews. It's called Disinformation, the Podcast. In each episode, we have an interview with a different author or filmmaker, and including people like Alan Moore, who wrote V for Vendetta and The Watchmen, and Gary Lachman, who used to be in the band Blondie and now writes occult books, and one of my personal heroes, Henry Lincoln, whose book Holy Blood, Holy Grail was the basis of the Da Vinci Code. Anyway.
He's hilarious.
Oh, my God. You know, I hate to sit here and talk about, like, oh, let's talk about my work for a while. You know, I'd much rather talk about the Guidestones or whatever. But before we get into that, I do want to say yes. Henry Lincoln, that's a great interview. Check that out. It's one of our most recent episodes. The man is 80 years old and just incredibly spry and sharp for his age.
Yeah.
And you can tell he's had a very interesting life. So maybe when I'm 80... you know, if I'm doing that good, I'll be feeling good, too. So, yeah, those are the shows that I do. And then after about a year of creating podcasts with Disinformation, I had the honor of being hired to work and do promotions for the company. And I'm the promotions director there. And I help promote roughly 50 books and about 50 or 60 DVD releases that we've got sort of out on the market right now. Most of them on these same kinds of topics. So I feel right at home. So...
and just to plug it in there too, disinfo.com is one of the best kind of news blog sites that I go to it every day, several times a day sometimes.
Oh, well, thank you. That's I am posting news stories on that site every day. I'm one of the moderators, and we have a great feed of just, you know, if you want 10 or 20 of the weirdest news stories.
And relevant.
And a lot of them relevant, I agree. Or at least I'd like to hope so, right? You know, you can get that on the site as well, and it's mostly relinked, right? We might make some blog commentary at the top of it, but mostly it's just a way of aggregating news stories that we know a certain kind of weirdo like yourselves, dear audience, will like. So check it out at disinfo.com, and also click up on the podcast link up there, because we've got like 5 or 6 different podcast series that we're listing in our directory, and you can get a great overview of not just news stories, but also recent cool podcasts. And may not be too long before Panopticon is on that list as well.
We'll see.
Anyway, let's get into this before I bore your audience to death with my the history of my early to mid-20s. So,
Well, so yeah, you are from you're from Georgia.
That's correct.
And the Georgia Guidestones are from Georgia.
They
obviously.
Are in fact.
I think that's why they're called that.
Yeah, I think that's why. So
had something to do with it. And so yeah, why don't you just tell us about the Guidestones?
Very open ended, but I love it. I love it. The Guidestones, the Georgia Guidestones, are. I believe a 14-foot tall monument in Elberton, Georgia. And Elberton, Georgia is a town east of Atlanta. It's about 70 miles, 80 miles east of Atlanta. And it's known because there are many granite quarries in the area. And many granite monument production workshops there, right? So it's sort of like where the dwarves live, if we're making the Tolkien analogy here, okay? And anyway, the greatest piece of craftsmanship that these folks in Elberton have ever created is a strange monument about 7 miles outside their town called the Georgia Guidestones. They're 14 feet tall, and on them is printed 10 guidelines for 10 guidelines for how to... Well, basically how to rebuild society after some great calamity happens, okay?
Right.
And these guidelines, these 10 guidelines, are printed in a number of different, very common modern languages on each face of this monument, which has 8 faces and then a capstone holding the 4 blocks, the 4 main blocks together at the top, and then there's a message written in a bunch of ancient languages on top as well. It also has holes cut into it that track the sun's movements at different times of the year, like the equinoxes, the solstices, and it also has a hole cut in the top of it through which you can see the North Star at any point in the year. So just on the surface of it, without even explaining where it comes from, what its history is, it's sort of reminiscent of something like the Rosetta Stone, right?
Right.
If you were some alien anthropologist, right, Roger Waters style, you come down to the Earth and you want to know what all the languages were like in 1980. Well, Georgia
right.
Guidestones would be a great way to find that out. Also, if you're some random primitive person from the Mad Max future and you want to track the stars or something, it could also be good for that. So these are just sort of basic uses of the monument, basic purposes of it that a lot of people overlook, because most people go straight to what they say and they want to sort of read something into that. Well, let's go ahead and talk about what these ten guidelines are. I think it's best to just read them out.
Can we real fast, before we do that, tell the brief story of R.C. Christian coming to town?
Oh, yeah, sure. We can talk about, I'll get to their origin in just a second. First, I want to just give people the idea of what they look like and what's on them. So,
yeah,
printed
sure.
in all of these languages, you've got, and these are the 10 guidelines. Number one, maintain humanity under 500 million in perpetual balance with nature. Two, guide reproduction wisely, improving fitness and diversity. Unite humanity with a new living language. Rule passion, faith, tradition, and all things with tempered reason. Protect people and nations with fair and just courts. Let all nations rule internally, resolving external disputes in a world court. Avoid petty laws and useless officials. Balance personal rights with social duties. Prize truth, beauty, love, seeking harmony with the infinite. Be not a cancer on the earth. Leave room for nature. Leave room for nature. So yeah, strange, right? Doesn't sound like any monument that I've ever heard of, you know. I mean, I'm not seeing any Thomas Jefferson quotes there, or
right.
in Georgia. I'm not seeing any, like, Robert E. Lee quotes or whatever. But, so strange in and of itself. And then the monuments have a strange history as well, because the person who had them built has chosen to remain anonymous all of these years. In fact, he goes by a pseudonym, which is R.C. Christian. And this is the sort of the strange tale of how this monument came into being. Around about 1979, this fellow, we're just going to call him R.C. Christian for the rest of the episode because that's all we know for a name.
Yeah.
This fellow R.C. Christian rolls up into Elbert County, right? Georgia is a much more backwater place 30 years ago, even than it is now. And so this must have seemed strange to the townspeople as well. He rolls up into town, and he goes to one of the granite finishing companies, one of the monument companies there, and he says, "I want to have this granite monument erected." And he, you know, shows them a model and sort of a mock-up of what later becomes the Guidestones and what they were supposed to look like. And, you know, I'm sure the person at the granite company was probably sort of taken aback a little bit and happy at the same time because, okay, first, it's a huge commission if it actually goes through. But also, it's like a bigger and more complicated monument than they've ever built before. You know, I mean, even the richest man's tombstone is not 14 feet tall. So, anyway, you know, he's like, the people at the Granite Finishing Company are like, okay, well, you know, if you can get this underwritten, if you can get this, you know, financed, we'll build it for you. So he goes to the bank in Elberton and tells the banker, you know, he has to get this loan going or get some kind of like financial underpinning for this project. By the way, this whole project, from what I can tell, it cost about $250,000. So, yeah, right. A lot for a granite monument, but not like New World Order level of money here. That's my first clue about. That's our first clue about where they came from and what their purpose is, and whether or not they have some sinister connotation. So, if there is a sinister connotation, it's only at a $250,000 budget. So, anyway, the guy at the bank, who I believe his name was Wyatt Martin, he's still.
It's Wayne Martin.
Wayne Martin, thank you. He's still alive. He's, I think, closing in on 85 or 90 years old now. He's the only person who knows who R.C. Christian actually is, because, of course, he had to give him his personal details for the loan. Right, but part of the terms for the loan or whatever underwriting they did at the bank there in Elberton was that they would never reveal who R.C. Christian was. So they get this going, and then they have to find a site to put the monument on. And this is another interesting part of the story that sort of shows you the scale. R.C. Christian is given a choice of a number of different sites to pick there in Elbert County as possible locations for the Georgia Guidestones. So when we think about the hilltop that they sit on, we must remember that, like, it wasn't picked specifically. It's not like somebody pulled out a map and it had the ley lines or the telluric currents marked on it and they said, here's the spot. You know, or it's got to be this latitude and longitude. No, it was because the person who had it built, R.C. Christian, like, it would have been incredibly expensive and technically very difficult to move these slabs very far from the quarry. Okay? And I've been to the quarry, the Pyramid Quarry, by the way, where they were quarried, and it's 20 miles. To transport. Like, you would transport the slab maybe 20 miles to the workshop and then a few more miles out to the site. So, if it were some sinister, supranational, trilateral commission kind of thing, you're building the Guidestones, once again, budget. Like, why can't they transport this awesome monument of theirs somewhere really in the middle of nowhere? You know, somewhere that would never, well, I mean, think about it, like, Elberton is east of Atlanta, right? If, say, the Russians attack or something and there's fallout or whatever, well, the wind would just blow the fallout right over Elberton, probably. So it's not like you're in a real safe spot there, other than it's in the country. So, anyway, they build the monument, you know, they quarry it, take the slabs over. These are huge. Like, very rarely has marble of this size been quarried for any sort of monument. Anyway, I'm going on, I know, but
no, it's good.
So they transport it. It's worked up. It's created. They have experts from the University of Georgia do some of the translation so they can get the passages correct, because there's another passage that's written around the top of the capstone. You can, you know, read more to find out exactly what the text is. But they had to get that translated into a bunch of different languages. And one of my friends is the Sanskrit professor that did the translation of the Sanskrit. And, you know, he made a little mistake in the text. There's a letter that's wrong up there or something, or like an accent mark that's off. So once again, like, it's all about how much money there is involved in the whole thing. Would the New World Order really just hire the Sanskrit professor at UGA to do this, or would they already know from their evil rituals and skin, skin-bound books and all that? You'd think they already
know
what they were going to put on the guidestones. So,
and just to add in there, that was the four ancient languages were Sanskrit, Classical Greek, Babylonian cuneiform, and Egyptian hieroglyphics.
Exactly. So, you know, once again, like Rosetta Stone, right? Anybody that sees this after the fact is going to get that out of it. So it takes about a year for all of this, around about a year for all of this stuff to get going. And then the next year, on the spring equinox, they unveil the Georgia Guidestones, right? And there's a ceremony, and the mysterious R.C. Christian may or may not have been there. But another thing about the stone, there's this flagstone, right, that explains the monument and explains how it's laid out and how it works and how you can cite things through it and everything. And there's a misspelling on that, too. The word pseudonym is spelled with an N, pseudonym. So I always say that word now, pseudonym. But yeah, once again, like, we're not talking about a world class monument, but we are talking about one of the most interesting, like, you know, roadside stops in the southeast, though. Okay.
Oh, for sure.
So, anyway. So they roll them out, right? There's a ceremony, and there's some coverage in the press. Different people write about it. You know, what's this monument all about? What's the whole point? And, people, like, my friend Austin calls the Georgia Guidestones this, like, prism of meaning, right? Like, you sort of go, you see this monument, and most people just sort of see what they're predisposed to see in it, or they see what they want to see in it. So from the very beginning this happened, and you would hear of stories of, you know, the local Christian churches not taking it so well and calling it a place of devil worship, and then the local Wiccan pagan coven coming around and being like, oh, this is a sacred site. Like, so many of these things are jiving with what we say. And
yeah, the Druids have, don't they celebrate the equinoxes or the solstices there or something like that?
I've heard that, and I've definitely been to the Guidestones on daybreak on the solstice. And all I saw were a bunch of hippie kids who may or may not have had some spray paint. So, I have not seen this, but people do appear there, sort of appear, right? People, you will see people there on those days because they know that it's special. But I think in the past, people would go out there. And for sure, some local pagans that I have met and talked to, Lady Galadriel was her pagan handle. And, going back to the Tolkien references again, she and her husband and their coven took part in some kind of ritual the night before of their own ilk, you know, like these people are like locals, you know, all of this stuff is just sort of going on outside of their control and they're reacting to it much like the local churches, except their reaction is to like it. So, so that was sort of, there was controversy about the monument from the very beginning, and that was, you know, part of the reason why But I think in general, you know, there were a lot of sort of very, I would say, liberal big business types, the Ted Turner types, who is in Atlanta, by the way, who seemed to take a liking to the Guidestones and to their message, as well as other crackpots like Yoko Ono. And so, you know, they sort of had a mixed reception. But just by reading them and looking at the time that they were built in, you know, it seems to me that the message is, watch out, humanity, you're probably going to destroy yourselves with a U.S.-Russian nuclear exchange. Which people, I mean, it's the early 80s, right? The Soviets are in Afghanistan. They're being very aggressive. We're rocked back on our heels after Vietnam. And so there was this public fear that arose within, I guess, in the zeitgeist, right, during that time. And it manifests itself in film, in like the miniseries The Day After. I don't know if you ever saw something that had Jason Robards in it, and it's all about, you know, what happens if we nuke each other and like what that looks like. And then there's one of my favorite films from when I was a kid with Matthew Broderick, the movie War Games. This is another one that like really spells out this idea of mutually assured destruction and that sort of. So people were really, I think, much more than in this war on terror and post 9/11 bullshit that we got going on now. I think people in around about 1980, in the early 80s, had a much like more heightened sense that we could really just push the button on each other real quick.
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah.
It was the same way in the early 1960s, as well. So,
right. I was just thinking of Dr. Strangelove.
Yeah. Exactly. You know, Cuban Missile Crisis, that whole thing. So if we put it in terms of that era and we look at the Georgia Guidestones, then we can totally see why somebody would want to build a monument like this. This is obviously a person that's not necessarily an evangelical Christian, okay, because there's not a bunch of Bible verses on it. But he does say he believes in God, that he is a Christian. It says that on the flagstone, right? So, you know, why else would I think that this has to do with people's Cold War fears, right? Well, R.C. Christian and most of the conspiracy theorists working this story look this right over. But R.C. Christian wrote a book, okay, and plopped it down right in front of the people of Elberton in their library and said, here, you can print this and sell it in your gift shop, and you can run copies of it in your library, and you can read it today. And it's all about this whole idea of going towards an age of reason. You read it, and it's just, it's all about geopolitics in 1980 and how this guy thinks we're going to blow each other up and how we've got to, like, have a more progressive way of looking at things. And then not only that, okay, R.C. Christian does not just simply slip away into the shadows after this either. An event happens about 10 years later that is so significant to him and to what he was doing with the Guidestones that he decided, it's time for me to write the people of Elberton. And I love how it's that way. It's like he's writing to the people of Elberton. He's not writing to, like, one person. It's like, you know, it's this thing that he's given to this town, basically. So he writes to them and he says, hey, I got some revisions on my book and the things that I've got to say that have come to light in terms of the fact that the Soviet Union has fallen. And I could never have guessed that it would happen. That's his reaction. He's like, I would have never guessed that it would have gone down this way. Like, he doesn't go so far. I don't think he goes so far to say I'm not as afraid or whatever. Right. But, like, the fact that that's the time when he chooses to make his comment after the fact, the time that he steps out of the shadows for just a minute to say, okay, postscript, you know, I think is very significant. And I honestly think, looking at this and because all of this, that the Georgia Guidestones are in many ways like a historic site that chronicles the Cold War. We don't have any of those in this country yet. It's too recent, right? But I really honestly think that it should be made into a historic site as, in many ways, a relic of that time and a relic of fears during that time. So,
Right.
That's the basic story. We can talk about conspiracy theories about it. And what people have come to view it as, and what's become of the God Stones here in a minute. But did you have some specific questions for me before we move on?
Well, first of all, I just noticed. I apologize. You were right. It's Wyatt Martin, not Wayne. For some reason, I wrote it down as Wayne, and that's what I thought it was. But anyhow, one quick question. Okay, I know you guys went there. Did you try to contact or find Wyatt Martin?
Yes, we went so far as to be able to get a number or to know who had a number at one point. And I hadn't followed it up. And part of the reason I haven't followed it up is because I haven't had a camera crew, right? Like, most of the work that I've done, this has been in the audio realm. We were lucky enough to be part of the filming of a pilot of a television series called Conspiracy Hunters, which hopefully you will see in a year or two on your local cable station. Anyway, it's Australian-made TV show, and they came out and filmed the Guidestones last year and interviewed us as part of it. And we did some stunts around Athens having to do with the Guidestones. I'm not going to say any more, but other than that, I've never been out there with a good camera crew, right? So I don't want to approach Wyatt Martin yet, but I feel like I better soon, right? Because he might not be long for this earth, right? As old, because I think he's 85 or something like that. But even if I do get to talk to him one day, I know what he's going to say to me. He told CNN 2 months ago when they ran a story on this, because it was the 30th anniversary. Right, CNN ran a story about this on the Equinox, or I think it was, or whatever the 30th anniversary was. Which also makes me think, maybe Ted Turner does have a liking for these things in some way. So, there's my conspiracy theory. Anyway, and in that article, they interviewed Wyatt Martin, and he said he was taking it to his grave. He was never going to tell who R.C. Christian was, that you know, that guy was his friend, or that guy, you know, he was going to remain true to him, or remain loyal to what he wanted. But he also said... He also said that R.C. Christian's son had recently contacted him and said that R.C. Christian had passed away. So, sorry to all of you Alex Jones listeners out there, but God rest your soul, R.C. Christian, okay?
Yeah, so, Well, yeah, I'm looking at this Wired article that came out recently, I believe, and it said that Wyatt Martin said that he had a whole, like, large box full of, I guess him and R.C. Christian maintained a pen pal relationship over the years,
yep.
And that he had this whole box of all this information about R.C. Christian, but that he would never release it or never, you know, tell the secret or anything about where this guy came from or maybe what some of the other unspoken motives were, or anything like that.
That's exactly right. And before we move on, the last thing I'll say on this is if you listen to the way he words that quote, there is some hope. Okay, and that's all I'm going to say about that. So.
Okay. Well, let's get into the guidelines a bit here, because this is obviously the most incendiary aspect of this whole thing.
Yeah, that's what sets people off, right? They don't. It's number one, right? Maintain the population under 500 million, right? What's that all about?
Right. Well, I think the most, probably the most that's offensive to people is the one about it's like you guide reproduction wisely, improving fitness and diversity, which obviously smacks of eugenics.
Well, does it smack of eugenics? Because isn't the point of eugenics to make everyone sort of have these, like, preferred traits? Like, think about the eugenics of late 19th, early 20th century America, England, and Germany. They are all, like, aimed at, well, yes, fitness, for one thing, right? But they're also, which is sort of like their cover story, right? You always see the films of the 50 German boys. They're all buff looking. They're like lifting the medicine ball or whatever, you know, in the stock footage.
Right.
And
You know, that's one part of it, but for, I think, a lot of the aim of the eugenics movement had this sort of mystic look at evolution and race behind it that said, you know, certain traits are preferred. Blue eyes are preferred. Blonde hair is preferred. A skull of a certain size is preferred. A certain height is preferred. All of this kind of stuff. Those things have nothing to do with fitness. Okay?
Right.
And they also have nothing to do with diversity as well. Like your genetically engineered SS army does not show diversity. Okay?
Right.
So,
not at all.
And so when I look at that, like, I don't really see anything too incendiary about that. But of course I'm not the kind of person that would knock something like Planned Parenthood either. Like, I think people ought to use fucking birth control. Okay, let me just put it to you that way. I've lived in the suburbs of Atlanta, Georgia, in the Bible Belt long enough to know people ought to use some damn birth control. If they don't want their lives to go in this very preset way. Right. So none of these things.
Well, when I said it smacks of eugenics, mm-hmm. Not because I think that it's a eugenicist standpoint, but I'm just pointing out that that's the one that's, like, most pointed to. The maintain humanity under 500 million, we could move on to that. But just to underwrite what you were saying, yes, I agree. The idea of guiding reproduction wisely is not a bad thing in my book.
No, me neither. And I don't think that...
In a general idea.
Right, and I don't think that by saying guide reproduction wisely, that means that you should, like, take on draconian communist Chinese measures either. Okay.
Like sterilization.
Yeah, right, you have one baby and your second baby doesn't get state benefits. Ah, no thank you. Right. No thank you. That's not right. Nothing right.
Well, and then the other one, and we can move on to the other eight, but it's these two that, you know, were most spoken of in Endgame, which I couldn't bring myself to watch again in researching this. But
that's a disinfo release. Don't say that.
We'll edit that.
No, man, that was a joke. Please leave that in. That was a joke.
Oh, okay. I wasn't sure if it was or not.
You can have you want of Endgame. So, and it is. We absolutely distribute that film and Terror Storm, which we can talk about that too. So let me grab a beer. Okay, and then pull it back just like 10 seconds and we'll get back in. Okay, let's get it going.
Okay. So this maintain humanity.
Yeah. Now I can hear you, sorry.
Okay. This maintain humanity under 500 million in perpetual balance with nature, I think most people, when they see that, they think, oh my God, they're going to kill 95% of us. But in light of the very prescient points you were making about this being such a Cold War influenced monument, perhaps he was literally thinking that after this mutually assured destruction, there would be somewhere in the neighborhood of 95% people dying.
That's right. Probably far more than that. And you can look at, and once again, let's look at the wording of the statement: maintain humanity under 500 million. That seems to denote to me, you know, you can interpret this differently, but to me I interpret that as saying, if you are reading this, we are already to the point where there are less than 500 million people in this earth. And therefore, this is your guideline going forward. These guidelines, though many of them are truisms to our society just as it is now, okay, they are more aimed at they're more aimed at Mad Max, right? Mad Max is going to walk up and get off of his motorcycle with his last gallon of gas and his last shotgun shell, and he's going to see the fucking Georgia Guidestones. And then the great southeastern tribe, what's left of all those Hicks, all us Hicks, excuse me, I guess we'll all come together there, right? And then it'll be part four. They never made a fourth sequel. But, you know, I think that's really what it's aimed at. But, yeah, this maintained population under 500 million, this is incendiary to some people because they think, okay, these Guidestones, I don't know. It's like they think that, well, they're into this whole thing of believing that the powers that be are all connected to each other in a very, like, tightly knit and spiritually homogenous cabal of people, right? And I'm not calling, when I say this, I'm not saying that people believe this are all, like, anti-Semitic or anything like that, okay? They just believe that there is a New World Order. Right. In fact, we at Disinfo have recently released a film called New World Order. It's a documentary about activists and radio show hosts and people like that who believe this and how that comes out in their lives. We also released the films of the conspiracy theorist Alex Jones, who talks about this monument in his film Endgame and comes down really hard on it. You know, he says, okay, this is their plan written in stone. That's about all he says, I'll say. Good film, you know, check it out. It's, you know, we release it. I'm not dissing it. I've watched it, but I feel a little bit of a the Chicken Little thing when he's talking about the Guidestones because he doesn't spend time explaining it. He doesn't cite sources. It's just there at the beginning, and it's there at the end. But so I hope you guys in the audience know what we're talking about. If not, just suffice to say that the biggest conspiracy theorists around with the biggest audiences do not like the Georgia Guidestones. Because they think that this New World Order, this overarching power structure, right, that's supposedly, like, you know, aiming us towards a 1984 kind of scenario, they assume that those people are Malthusians, I guess is what they call them, and that they want to strip back the population, that they want to kill off a bunch of people so that the upper crust can have more resources for itself. And let me tell you, like, I wouldn't put it past some of the people in the upper classes of any of the Western countries to feel that way. But that's different from saying that the Georgia Guidestones advocates that idea. Okay?
Right. No, that's a great point. Like, and another thing is this one that says, just as a precursor for anybody who wouldn't understand this already, I mean, obviously the New World Order fear is based around one of the biggest facets of it is that these rulers, secret rulers of the world, want to create a one world government. That's the one of the biggest things, right? And it says here, one of the guidelines is, let all nations rule internally, resolving external disputes in a world court, which is what basically we have now.
That's exactly right. I mean, we have United Nations right now. A lot of people don't like
it. We have a world court in the Hague.
That's right. I mean, and a lot of people think that these things are that they erode national sovereignty, and I'm not here to argue whether that's true or not. But even if they have eroded national sovereignty in different states, which they may have, you know, I don't think that do we live in tyranny? No. We may all listen.
Well, and the fact that it says, it says let the nations rule internally. Right. That flies in the face of this idea that whoever these people were that built this monument and this man R.C. Christian were not of the same stripe that some certain conspiracy theorists would assume.
No, exactly. But they still, but R.C. Christian and these conspiracy theorists, even if he's not sinister, they still have a big parting of ways on that point, right? The Georgia Guidestones do advocate for something that they're not for. Okay, in that point. But to say that they are somehow the New World Order's plan, I don't think is a very well thought out argument. And it's certainly not a good enough reason to go and try to vandalize or pull the monument down. Okay, which is what has happened, not since the conspiracy theories hit, it's happened since Barack Obama was elected president. Okay.
Really?
Yes, that was the moment it started.
It was in response to the election. It was not in response to, say, the release of Endgame or something like that, even though Endgame is quoted directly in the graffiti.
Right.
Once again, disinfo release, check it out. Rent it or buy it. But just to see what I'm talking about here. Like right. I said, it makes good arguments, except for about the Guidestones. Like, there's no explanation. So,
right. Well, and another thing, just one more, from going, like, since we're kind of talking about the guidelines still, it says balance personal rights with social duties. That's a really pretty just benign, conservative ideal that's been around for centuries in the West. You know, that's a basic Enlightenment ideal. Right? I mean, that's, there's nothing radical about
right, well,
balancing personal rights with social duties. You know?
No, I don't think so. And I think you just hit on the key word here, and you said the word Enlightenment, right? That harkens back to a different previous historical time, right? The Enlightenment
right.
is sometimes also called the Age of Reason. It right. grows out of the Renaissance and the Renaissance European interest in experimental and more scientific ways of looking at the universe and even
rational.
Rational, exactly.
Right.
So let's talk about R.C. Christian. Instead of trying to tear down other people's ideas of what they think the Guidestones are, which I hope we've done very well.
Yeah. Let's move on and build.
Let's move on and talk about, exactly, let's move on and talk about who R.C. Christian may have actually been. Now,
well, on the stones, isn't there the plaque on the ground with the, I think it's the same one that has the misspelled pseudonym where it says that he came from a, quote, small group of Americans who seek the Age of Reason. And age and reason are both capitalized.
Right, Age of Reason. So when we put it in capital letters, we're talking about the historical period of the Enlightenment, the very same right. period that brought you things like the Constitution and the Declaration of Independence. And people like Voltaire and Jefferson and all these writings that, strangely enough, the patriot, libertarian, conspiracy-minded folks love to look back on and say they love, okay? Well, anyway, so what do we have? We have all the clues we have are a name, R.C. Christian, and a time, Age of Reason, okay? We take R.C. Christian and Age of Reason and we do a Raymond's Brain Google search, and what pops up are Rosicrucians, okay? Back in the early 17th century in Germany, just after many of the key occult figures of the Renaissance had passed through, maybe 10 years before that, people like Dr. John Dee, who you may have heard of. About
right.
10 years later in Germany, these quote, manifestos appear. And they are the manifestos of a group calling themselves the Brotherhood of the Rosy Cross, the Rosicrucians, okay? Their propaganda is, it's very boisterous. It says, you know, we are a group of enlightened men and we are here to promote religious tolerance and ecumenism and science and different progressive ways of looking at the world, okay? And to that they mix the sort of Christian occult tradition that was kicking around at the time.
When alchemy plays a large role in,
yes,
in this time.
That's exactly right. So these people have a very strange mix of beliefs. They say we are here to not just reform Europe, but to bring about a greater reformation of the whole wide world. And it causes this big to-do in Germany because nobody knows if there actually is this group of people that exists or not. Is there really the secret? They're like the original secret society, right? And everybody wondered, are they out there? Are they operating in secret? Whatever. But if we take a closer look at the texts, right? For instance, the first Rosicrucian Manifesto says it's like a two-pack, right? You have the Rosicrucian Manifesto in your little book or pamphlet that you bought in the 1700s, and then you've also got
this pamphlet that says this section that comes before that says this is the more secret philosophy behind the philosophy of the Rosicrucians. Once again, if you dig a little deeper, the people always say, they give you some text to tell you what's going on, just like R.C. Christian leaving a book for us that no one wants to read.
Right.
You know, they say, okay, here's a guide to the more secret philosophy behind our philosophy, and it's once again, it's Dr. John Dee and his sort of occult, alchemical, Christian, strange amalgamation of philosophy of the time. And then if you read the text sort of in that light, you realize that it's this big allegory. It's like a metaphor. And one of the manifestos is called The Chemical Wedding of Christian Rosencrantz, right? And it describes this wedding procession and this week-long show that goes on around this very classic late Renaissance, almost Shakespearean style kind of wedding, royal wedding. And you read into that and you look more closely at that and like the way it's written, once again, it's a metaphor, right? It's like an allegory, and it has all of these, like you were saying, it's alchemy. It's got all these alchemical symbols in it. And so basically there's this cover story and then there's something that's underneath it. So the idea of the secret society isn't necessarily up front with this. It's more about conveying this some kind of secret philosophy. And what's strange is that whether or not these Rosicrucians existed before these things were written or not, and by the way, John Valentin André, one of the purported authors of these texts, said later, oh, I just fabricated it all. Like, I was just dreaming about this kind of group being there, and I wanted to write this text as an homage to what I wanted. And right. But what happened was is that after that, Rosicrucian fraternities actually did start popping up. And then the whole thing spreads over to France, and it causes a big furor there, and that pops up. And then if you look at the beliefs of these Rosicrucian groups, they are not unlike the beliefs of early Freemasons. And if we look
at right, the Freemasons basically picked up the baton.
Mm-hmm. You are exactly right. They were the next sort of manifestation of that. You know, the Rosicrucian texts are coming out early 1600s, and the Grand Lodge of England comes together in 1717. So. But let me come around to this idea of an age of reason, right? Because all of these philosophies sit really good, and this person, R.C. Christian, right, which is just Christian Rosencrantz, it would seem, if we take this theory as the truth, then R.C. Christian means Christian Rosencrantz. And this sort of, this whole idea of an age of reason really comes into focus then. Because if we look at what these guys were saying, and then what the Freemasons were saying later, and then what the early founders of our country were saying, and the people around the time, right before the French Revolution, were saying, it's all the same thing. It's all like, there needs to be religious tolerance, and we need to have a greater respect for nature, and we need to have more just laws, and people need to have the vote, and women should have equal rights, and all of this stuff that, let me tell you, the Christian church would have never, ever, 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 ever given you. Okay?
Exactly.
So,
because the Bill of Rights really is largely a Masonic document, or at least a Masonically inspired document, as far as the ideals enshrined within it, all these things that you just mentioned.
Yeah, exactly. And I think that, and so when we talk about an age of reason, that's what we're talking about. So, and we bring all this and we fast forward it up to the present day, right? There are still little fraternities all over the West who call themselves Rosicrucians. One of them, one of the largest, I believe, is called the AMROC. Okay?
AMROC. Yeah, yeah.
They even have some buildings out, I think, in San Jose, California, and they have like a library out there and some very like Egyptian-looking statues.
It's actually pretty ornate, and it's actually pretty large. But
there's a lot of And there's a lot of homage paid to Francis Bacon and other of these, you know, Age of Reason type fellows. So, I imagine R.C. Christian as he's probably a World War II or Korean War veteran. He has an eye towards serving his community. He's probably well educated and into, speculative Masonic esoteric kind of topics. He probably belongs to one of these small Rosicrucian fraternities that exist and have existed since probably since the late 1800s, probably most of them. Like, this is not like, they can't stretch their history all the way back to these people we were talking about before, okay? They're just picking up the idea and picking up the baton, like you said. Right. So let's imagine R.C. Christian is this kind of guy. He's upper middle class. He's not rich. He belongs to this fraternity. It's very spiritual and progressive. And this is the way him and his lodge buddies probably want to express something to the world or leave something to history. That's really the way I look at it. And that's from, of course, that small group of Americans, right, that we're talking about.
Right.
But let me tell you, if that small group of Americans was people like Ted Turner and whoever other New World Order luminaries you want to point out,
Henry Kissinger.
And all of the guys at Bohemian Grove or whatever. If they had come together as a small group of Americans to build the Georgia Guidestones, they would have put up more than $250,000 for them. Sorry.
Yeah.
Like, they just would have. There wouldn't have been the spellings. There wouldn't have been any of that kind of shit. So the whole argument really falls apart. And when you get out there and you see them, like, it is not a letdown by any means, but you get the sense of what I'm talking about. And I've been out there enough times to know. And it's really sad, having gone out there in recent years and having seen them defaced and vandalized over and over again, because it started with the anti-New World Order crowd, and then local street gangs and high schoolers and everyone else identified it as a place where you could go and graffiti. Even to the point, and like, I actually was just reading this on the Wikipedia article about this. It's been updated recently. The last time I went up there, I noticed that it looked like there was a notch cut in one of the stones. And I was like, what is that? You know, it looks like somebody had tried to get a hook in there or something. And sure enough, on this Wikipedia article, it mentions that somebody had literally drilled a hole in the top of this thing, probably attached a hook to it, and they're going to try to pull it down with their pickup truck. And,
right.
I'm sorry, like, if you see yourself as a patriot, then you ought to believe in free speech. Okay?
And if you
believe in free speech, that means that people have the right to say shit. People have the right to say things, even if you don't agree with them. Okay.
Yeah.
Now I want to like take a minute to turn the conspiracy theory around, and to look at it from a different angle. Let's for a minute assume that the New World Order, as it was, that the Bilderbergers all got together and said, we're all going to put in a dollar or $2 or whatever, and we're going to make some Georgia Guidestones as a little clue to everybody that we're about to off their asses. Okay?
Right.
That just doesn't seem to work. That just doesn't seem to be... I can't see that happening. So then let's look at R.C. Christian, right? R.C. Christian...
Well, they have nothing to gain.
They have nothing to gain, exactly. Right? But then we look at somebody like R.C. Christian. Let's say R.C. Christian was somehow connected with the New World Order. If he was, or if he had some kind of secret knowledge, right, that we don't understand, that we aren't privy to, or that we're just guessing about in documentaries like Endgame or Terror Storm, right? Let's imagine that he was onto that, right? And he knew what the plan was. This is their plan. This is what they're going to do. And I've got to spell it out in some way. If that's the case, and he built then wouldn't the Guidestones be a warning to you?
Right.
You know what I'm saying? If they really do outline the New World Order's plan, and one or a couple of men decided to scrape up $250,000 to have them built and put in a random spot in the middle of nowhere in Georgia, like, it would seem to change the narrative of who R.C. Christian is. Like, if the conspiracy is real, then R.C. Christian is like a hero. Because he's
letting the cat out of the bag. Because
he's letting the cat out of the bag. That's exactly right. So why tear down his monument? Like, why hate on what he's saying? Like, it's obvious the New World Order didn't build it to say the joke's on you, because they would have built it way better. Like,
right.
So that's a...
Or not have built it at all.
Or not have built it at all, exactly, and just done it by now.
Right, right.
So
that's really interesting, because, you know, like, when I first listened to the Out There podcast about this, I did kind of think, oh, that does sound like some of this, you know. I mean, I think it's hard when you're on there on the internet looking around at all this New World Order, I call it propaganda and stuff. It's kind of hard to separate the wheat from the chaff, as you kind of just did this past hour, and because I never really thought about it in this depth, I guess, but it's true. It doesn't really seem like something that could have been built by the people who it was supposedly built by, like this shady, diabolical cabal of people who want to kill you and sterilize, you know, take over the earth.
Right.
If anything, it's almost an opposing force to that.
It really does seem like it. You know what I'm saying? Like, seriously, if it is the conspiracy, then the conspiracy is exactly the same plot as the movie Moonraker. And that just seems a little silly to me. I mean, that's all I'm saying. So, But yeah, I just think that, you know, whatever the message is, whatever the point is, however you want to read this through your own prism of meaning, right? Don't diss on R.C. Christian, because it's obvious that he didn't mean anybody any harm, you know. And that's really, I think, you know, that's really my message about this whole thing. Yes, I want to convey to the audience like what this monument is and how mysterious and interesting it is, but I also like feel the need, because nobody else does, to say that people should leave this monument alone. Like,
absolutely.
You know, they should go and appreciate it for what it is, and if they don't like it, they should leave it alone. Or they should go, should go out there and have a big protest. I don't care. Just don't like limit somebody else's free speech, because you are not a patriot if you do that. So, you know, and as far as the Guidestones go, I really hope that I've done a couple of podcast interviews about this topic, and I really hope that this isn't sort of the end of my research on this. Like, I really want to create some kind of short film or something about the Guidestones.
I was going to say, aren't you guys, I guess that kind of leads us into away from the topic at hand, but aren't you guys making a film about it?
Well, we're looking at the prospect of making a film about it, and maybe I shouldn't even say that much, but I would like to. I'll say that. And if anybody listening in the audience feels particularly compelled by this topic and wants to help in some way to make a film like that, whether it be by, you know, adding information to this big pile of information that we've got on this, or by investing to help them get cleaned up, which probably they could use, or just getting this film off, like any of those things, like, please contact me. My email address is ray@disinfo.com. And I'm trying to think if there's anything else about this story. There is the tale of the masked ranter of the Georgia Guidestones, if you'd like to hear that.
Yeah, sure. Time. Like I said, I've got like 15 minutes, so we should have plenty of time.
Okay, great. Well, so right after the Obama election and right after this initial vandalism happened, and by the way, the first time they were vandalized, someone went out there with a big old jar full of epoxy, and tossed it up on the face of one of the faces of the Guidestones, which you can't really get that off. You have to kind of grind it off. So it's just it's just real obvious where that stuff was, even though they've tried to clean it up. And so that happened, and then a few weeks later they were defaced again, and that made the Elberton paper, but nothing else really, except for Infowars.com, the site of Alex Jones and the conspiracy theories that we were just talking about. He's the guy that made Endgame and New World Order, or he's in New World Order, and he's also in our film Terror Storm.
What was the Obama deception?
Yeah, he's also made a film called The Obama Deception. You know, yeah. I mean, Alex is, he's cool.
That's a whole conversation.
Right? He's cool and he's anti-government. And so of course the stuff about, and he had mentioned the Guidestones in this film, so of course that immediately gets posted on the site. Somebody goes out there and takes pictures and posts that on InfoWars. And I was following this at the time, and I was kind of appalled, but it was, I mean, it's exactly what you would expect. It was hundreds of comments of, oh, somebody should have pulled those fucking things down, and just, you know.
Every other word is misspelled.
Every other word is misspelled, or it's, like I said, the F word, or, you know, whatever. And I really have a feeling that whoever posted those pictures on InfoWars initially may have had something to do with their defacement in the first place, because doing something like that is really for attention. And here's why I think it was all about attention, was because, you know, that's the second incident. And then the third incident is some dude goes out there with his video camera with a mask and the sunglasses on and makes this, like, this is a message to the New World Order. You can actually find this on YouTube, and like the guy's voice is all like distorted, you know, with an audio editor after the fact, and like it's very, you know, he talks about how it's he mentions it as, quote, your Stargate and all of this kind of, yeah, exactly, all of this kind of stuff. And I'm just like, it was appalling in a lot of ways, and just really,
it's such a coward to me, after all these years of researching this stuff and looking into this stuff from the fringe to whatever, that's just kind of like a very cowardly way of looking at the whole situation. You know what I mean?
Oh, absolutely. Like, and
just,
like,
just expressing this very high level of paranoia that's really kind of bad for you after a little while.
Oh, well, it's totally bad for you. And the worst thing about it was it wasn't just this guy. It was like he was dragging in organizations that he sort of laterally worked with, like We Are Change Georgia. Like there's this big We Are Change Georgia sign right in the middle of his message to the New World Order. And I'm just like, you know, I agree with some things that We Are Change does, and I don't with others, but I know that that was not like a We Are Change sanctioned thing. You know what I'm saying? So anyway, I followed this story. This was about a year ago this all happened, a little bit more than a year ago this all happened. And not too long after that, I see another version of this video pop up on YouTube, and I'm like, oh, here we've got a different angle on this. It's like taken from a different camera or something, or cut a little differently. And I start watching it, and I realize I immediately start cracking up, because the guy's voice isn't distorted anymore, okay? And you know that moment when you first hear Mike Tyson speak? You know, it was like that. The guy's voice is just classic. And so I'm like, oh, here we go. So I start reading the description of the video, and the description goes something to the effect of, this video is a video of my supposed friend, Jim Stachowiak of Martinez, Georgia, who I let borrow my video camera and drove all the way to Elberton and paid for his gas and bought his food. And then when I put up the video that he told me he wanted me to put up for him, he had YouTube take it down for copyright infringement. So screw him, here's all the details. And so it was just like a miracle. It was like I had resigned myself to the fact that I was never going to know who the masked ranter was. And then a week later, here's his name, and I start doing some more research on.
Well, do you think that was legit? That name?
I absolutely know the name is legit, because I did some more research about this and found some other YouTube videos of this guy at We Are Change events being
you know, just really uppity, you know. Like, I'm not trying to lay a big diss down on this guy. Like, I'm not saying that he was the one that vandalized the guide stones, but it kind of makes me wonder. You know, I'll go so far as to say that. And, but yeah, so, you know, but I did some research, and of course, conspiracy theorist podcast host, this guy. You know, it's like, he's like my arch, you know, and it was funny, and I heard, and so I ended up digging up pictures of him on the web that people had posted, because they were like, they had had real bad experiences with him, and they wanted people to know, like his ex co-hosts and stuff, and there's like pictures of him with shirts that say "Nuke Mecca." He's holding a submachine gun, and his shirt says "Nuke Mecca," and I'm just like, you know, this is like, and I want you to think about this, patriots and conspiracy theorist fans. I'm one of you, like, and he and people like that are not, and they make you look bad, you know, and they make your political philosophy look like it's bullshit. So, you know, I guess that's my take home message today on the Georgia Guidestones, is that if you believe in conspiracy theories and you want to get back at the government for lying to you and screwing you over for all of these decades, don't take it out on the Georgia Guidestones. Like, take them off of your radar as far as that goes. And if you have some proof or some extra details about this story that I am not pulling up, especially about something called the Lucius Trust, which I keep hearing mentioned in passing in people who talk about the Georgia Guidestones, but they never, like, explain what the Lucius Trust is and how it is connected to the Georgia Guidestones. Because if there's, and of course the word Lucius, I mean, it gets the, it gets the evangelicals up in arms, which I get that, but like, if there is some, like, trust out there, and please, like I said, send me information on this if you can, listeners. But if there's some trust out there that's holding up the Guidestones, what's happening to the money? Like, that money isn't going anywhere. Oh, and another detail about this that I forgot to mention earlier is that R.C. Christian had planned to put up way more stones than he did. Okay? They had to scale it back from what they originally wanted. They also had planned to lay a time capsule underneath the flagstone of the monument. And
I saw that.
Yeah, you see it, if you see pictures of the flagstone, it'll say time capsule laid, and then it's blank. You know?
Yes, it's blank.
Well, it's blank because the people of Elberton never got together and laid a frickin' time capsule there. Like, come on, like any elementary class in the whole county at any point before now, if it could have had this done. But no, it's never been laid. But people think that there's this mystery there, that, oh, there is a time capsule under there, and that they just didn't want to mention when it had been laid down, so there was no time, so you wouldn't know when to pull it up or whatever. So people have literally gone out there and dug under the edges of that flagstone. Like, literally, I mean, either trying to steal it or to try to dig under it to see if there's treasure or whatever under there. And it's just like, I don't know, I used to love to go to this place. And now when people ask me to take him out there, I'm just like, I don't want to deal with those that negative emotion so much.
Yes, it's depressing.
Oh, well, here's your final cherry on top of that. Like, when I went out there on the solstice, this is kind of funny, when I went out there on the solstice to film the alignment with the rising sun through the peephole, the keyhole, as they call it. I couldn't get my shot quite right with my camera because somebody had spray painted a giant penis and balls on the monument right over where I was going to have my shot. So,
well, that's like a metaphor for the political environment we live in, I guess, the intellectual environment we live in.
Tell me about it, man. Tell me about it. Yeah. So yeah, that's my story about the Guidestones and.
This has been really great. I mean, you're just you're an encyclopedia of information on this topic, which I think is a really fascinating one. And like I said, it's like I said to you in the email. You know, with a lot of things that we research, like things having to do with conspiracy theory, the paranormal, the occult, etc. There's not a 16-foot tall granite monument that you can go look at. You know what I mean? It's like usually you're dealing with ifs. and things you're not clear on, things that aren't tangible, hearsay, you know, that sort of thing. And Georgia Guidestones is one of those really interesting topics within this whole kind of genre that is, you know, we can all go and look at it and research it and dig deeper into it. So I was surprised I hadn't heard about it for so long.
Well, you know, that's the way it is. And to be honest with you, the U.S. is covered with sites like this. Maybe not quite as mysterious or as monumental, but there are sites like this all over the place. If you are interested in weird American sites, another one you might want to Wikipedia is Coral Castle. So it's in Florida.
Huh, yeah, I'll check that out. There's a really great website called Atlas Obscura.
Yeah.
That's you've seen that. Yeah, that's a great site. I always research it before I travel anyway. But I'm kind of getting limited right here. I gotta go to work, unfortunately, here in a bit. But what's coming down the pike for Raymond Wiley?
Well, Raymond Wiley is going to continue to try to make podcasts every other week and succeed in only doing it about every 3 weeks. And so you can check those out at disinfo.com. Usually our most recent podcast is right there at the top, one of the three columns on the top of the front page. If not, you can click podcasts and check out our recent offerings. Doing that, I have been working more closely with the people at realitysandwich.com and the Evolver Social Movement, the Daniel Pinchbeck team. Been working with them a little bit and going to try to work on this Guidestone stuff more as the year progresses, and hopefully going to be traveling, you know, and not in the boondocks of South Georgia like I am tonight. So it was very good to talk to you. It helped me pass some of this time out on the road. So.
Oh no, it was a pleasure. I feel like this came off really well, and we got all the good information in there, in a concise and succinct manner. So it's good.
Oh well, that's. Go ahead.
Yeah, no, go ahead.
Well, that's what the audience likes to hear: concise and succinct and straight to the point. So.
Yeah, for sure. Well, and like I said, it was a privilege to have you on. I've been a big fan of your work since like 2006 when I discovered Out There. And I love everything that you and Joe have done, and the stuff that you're doing with disinformation is equally stellar. So keep up the good work, please, because you guys are two of the more sane voices out there in the whole kind of esoteric research media community. So I applaud you for doing such a job well done over the past few years.
Well, thank you very much, and it's been a pleasure being on your show tonight.
For sure. Thanks for taking the time.
Anytime.
Well, alrighty. There you have it, listeners. Panopticon thanks Raymond Wiley and his always intriguing and perspicacious commentary on all things esoteric and awesome. Please do go and check out disinfo.com as well as outthereradio.net. both of which are linked on the website. So until next time, don't forget, you're doing a great job.